what's our opinion.
Really appreciate this opportunity. It's great to be in such great company. And I really love this opportunity to talk about not just lessons from the high input, very successful agriculture in the U.S. for Africa, but actually I was asked to talk about lessons from Africa for the sustainable intensification. So what are some of the global implications of sustainable, and what does it look like on the ground? So after this very good overviews that we've been hearing, I'm actually going to talk more about bring you to Africa and think about it from that perspective. So, of course, this isn't work done alone. This is interdisciplinary work with ag economists. Yes, we can't live without them. Geographers, social scientists, soil scientists, people from many different aspects in terms of including long-term relationships and collaborations with University of Malawi, Michigan State University, support from USAID, Feed the Future, and of course our CIA and IATA colleagues. So I think all of us would agree that this is one of the biggest challenges in sustainable intensification that we're facing, and that is soil health, as we heard. So imagine if you were trying to feed your family, trying to bring in an income from the small bit of land that's starting to get degraded. So as you intensify, you get access to a little bit of manure or fertilizer, you didn't see any return. You're using the latest improved seeds, but you're just not getting any corn out of that. So we have evidence in Malawi that not only when you convert land do you lose carbon, which has been well shown before, but in many places in Malawi it seems that we're actually still on a steady decline in soil carbon. Some of the first evidence I think we have that over the last 20 years soil carbon continues to go down, which is quite scary. And the other issue related that I want to bring up is that whether you are a smallholder farmer in Mali or Malawi, or here in the Midwest, in any case, you need to conserve your resources to improve your profitability, to feed your family with as small amount of that fertilizers as possible. We need to conserve resources. So we're all in this together. But we've heard much, and I really do think it's very important. I could give a whole talk on zonal management. How do we target, make agriculture more precise? But the underlying principle for me about sustainable intensification is biology. That we need to change so that we are no longer facing areas that have no crop growing on them. In non-irrigated agriculture around the world, whether it's a long cold season, such as in Michigan, or a long dry season, we have this problem of there's no living roots there. So how are we going to build soil carbon when we only grow a crop for like 3 months of the year? Is there ways that we can integrate, diversify, through understories, through cover crops, through different types of, but these have to be also profitable in order to be sustainable. So something that are practical for farmers, but also allow a plant that can grow and provide us the environmental benefits, that soil carbon, capture more sunlight, capture more nitrogen. Can we do this? So this is one I'm going to be talking a bit more about. Is a multi-purpose type of cover crop that produces food and also a grain that can be sold and is sold into India. So this is pigeon pea, which if you've ever seen me give a talk before, you know pigeon pea is going to be snuck in there. So I can pretty much sit down now. This is my main point here. But I am going to give you a bit more detail about how we can capture more sunlight, capture more nutrients, and diversify. And not just any kind of diversity. I think diversity plus would capture a lot of our work in Africa that's been successful, and that we need types very strategically, systems thinking about how can we diversify in a way that is sustainable. In other words, it addresses incomes, nutritions for people, and also addresses this really lack of enough sunlight capture. So there are historical systems. I want to first remind us that, in fact, some smallholder farming systems, such as the classic three sisters here, we've got corn providing the calorie capture, so turning sunlight into calories. We've got beans growing up that, fixing nitrogen. We've got a cucurbit, a pumpkin, suppressing weeds. So this is actually a masterful way to capture more sunlight, right? Because you've got three different plant architectures together. And not only do legumes fix nitrogen, but I'm going to make a case that sometimes they solubilize, depending on the species and the soil type, solubilize phosphorus. So, you know, we have a massive inefficiency of phosphorus. Some people still talk about peak phosphorus. It's still facing us. And if we can't start to use it more efficiently than the current 20%, we need to think about how can we biologically do that. We have a system that does that. So there is historical systems that require mixed cropping, but what are practical systems as we go forward that might have implications, particularly for higher input agriculture and mechanized agriculture? So I'm going to go back to the work I started in 1993 in Malawi, where we saw a whole landscape that was all corn. You could be in Iowa, except there was no soybeans at that time. So you see corn everywhere you look in southern Africa. And we thought, well, let's bring in improved varieties of beans, of pulse, and also green manures, such as here, agroforestry systems, Trafosia. This is the green manure that's growing underneath the corn. And if you have the time to cut that frequently, you can really have a massive improvement in soil carbon and use less fertilizer and get massive fertilizer efficiency from the fertilizer you put on. So it was a great system. There was one problem with it. No one adopted it. So it's something, too much labor, or somehow the system's still being promoted, and we still try it out occasionally, but there's no adoption. So what can we do? Because this system is great. Farmers did certainly pick up modern varieties of beans. There's been pretty large-scale adoption of some of these varieties. Great, but do they provide environmental service? Now, I love beans. I've worked on it for many, many years, since the 80s, but not a great nitrogen fixer, except for climbing bean, another story. You know, about 50% nitrogen fixation, small statured crop there. Nothing wrong with being small statured. But it doesn't give you environmental services, right? So what can we do? Back to pigeon pea. We need multi-purpose diversification, type of diversity plus, that gives us, so we have all this green vegetation, but also something that farmers can sell. So these types of tropical legume bushes, they can be cut back. And farmers, about 40% of them in some of our studies in Malawi, are actually showing that they regrow them for 2 years. So they've managed to integrate them into their system, get away from that long dry season. They actually have something growing, fixing carbon, fixing nitrogen, and solubilizing phosphorus. But you might think, okay, well, much of the world we can't grow tropical legumes. Well, I just thought I'd put a few out that, in fact, there has not been much improvement of these, and yet there's opportunities here. And this includes, of course, pigeon pea. These are sort of multi-purpose legumes. Lab, over there on the right. This one historically was grown throughout Africa. It's still eaten. The leaves are eaten as a vegetable, and some places, some groups still eat the grain. But it's mostly grown as a forage. So multi-purpose green manure that also has potential. The price right now in Tanzania is about $3 kg. So it's actually maybe just a blip, but quite economic. Same pigeon pea, because you've got India markets, you have actually a very sustained market for that one. Tarwi's grown more in South America, but it's a lupin, so it can really produce massive amounts of carbon and solubilization of phosphorus. It's one of its specialty. And then alfalfa. There's been some efforts to make it more into a multi-purpose protein and grain, as well as its forage uses. So long term, we could solubilize phosphorus, because all three of these in the circle here have been proven to access phosphorus from sparingly soluble pools. So when we add fertilizer, we can actually keep using that for a long time rather than have it just locked up if we have these legumes in the system. So one of my main goals here is to point out that not all legumes are the same. Diversifying with grain, soybean, great for high harvest index, giving us a lot of grain we can sell. Doesn't give us these other environmental services, such as the residue nutrient content, nitrogen and phosphorus, to recycle and to build soil carbon. So we need a wider range, and I would particularly say we need more options here, the multi-purpose types of options that we can combine in different ways into these systems, because we just haven't done much breeding in these multi-purpose legumes. So we have few options there. But of the few we do, we have some success with them. So traditionally, in pastures and certainly in smallholder farms around the world, even in places like China, there's still strip intercrops, and here in-row intercrops. Cereals such as corn are grown with legumes, which again optimizes capturing of sunlight, fixes a lot of nitrogen, and accesses phosphorus. Also, there's emerging evidence that, you know, beneficials, they need that energy drink from the legume. So we shouldn't forget about all the services that we get from integrating mixed systems with legumes. Another system, which is more novel, although it's smolders in India have used this for hundreds of years, but we've been trying this out in Malawi, and pigeon pea is an overstory, and then groundnut, more commonly known here as peanut, is the understory. And so here you get a doubled up legume, you get a double shock of legume to really improve that soil fertility, build that soil health, while providing two crops. So for the amount of time and energy and labor, we actually can see some diversification. Your root systems are also able to use the complementary architecture, can really build soil carbon. So you can see that the pigeon pea here in the overstory is starting to provide some residues here. The pigeon pea grows slowly at first, so it can be planted at the same time, and at first it won't compete at all with the peanut. And this peanut can be harvested, and then the pigeon pea really takes off. And as I said, it can be cut back and then regrown in the second year, giving us two crops over time. So this system is recently been released in Malawi as a technology, as a way to people that really have to grow a lot of maize, because we saw that beautiful Norfolk rotation, which is wheat in the 1 year out of seven, is amazingly high yields. One of the problems is farmers may need wheat more often. In this case, much of the Midwest, we need corn more often. So we need to figure out ways to sneak in these diversified options that still really provide the rotational break, all the other services that we're looking for, so carbon buildup, but we also make sure that the cash crops are there in sufficient quantity to build, support incomes as well as build soil carbon. So I'm going to give this one example of diversification with pigeon pea. Our geography work with Brad Peter and Joe Messina has shown that in fact, although this is the country of Malawi in southern Africa, in the south is where pigeon pea is grown currently due to partly markets. As I said, they're sold and going to India. And yet pigeon pea is ideal conditions for it are in central Malawi. In fact, it's even better for pigeon pea growth than corn, which is what's currently grown throughout this country. So we have the evidence that you could grow these multi-purpose legumes throughout the country and many other places. But what would happen? I've made these claims it would build soil carbon, but many of you may be thinking back to, well, actually, how many residues do we get from legumes anyways? You know, they're very ephemeral. Are they recalcitrant? You know, do we actually get the services from cover crops and from legumes as we say we do? And there's actually very few studies looking at agroforestry and green manure studies from this lens of saying, okay, how much roots do they produce? How much greenhouse gases do they mitigate? So we decided to go out, and with the help of my student, Chwimbu Wembira, who did this very brave thing of under hundreds of plots and over 50 farms, she actually looked under degraded conditions, how big would pigeon pea get? What, in digging out these roots and sieving them, to at least have a one-time measure of the root biomass, which then, of course, is the key contributor to build soil carbon in these circumstances. Now, now obviously, this is an underestimation because root exudates aren't captured here, and also root turnover, which may be fairly high from shrubs. But at least we have a measure of what the potential is under degraded conditions. And many people have looked at agroforestry systems and cover crops under research stations where we have soil organic matter already that's quite high. But we don't, being able to build soil organic matter under the low fertility, the low degraded soils is really the challenge here. And so we've found that soil pigeon pea can produce over 12 tons of biomass, which is very exciting. But in fact, farmers cannot fit this economically into their system. And so the current system suppresses pigeon pea massively. So farmers generally grow a cereal legume, maize, pigeon pea in this case, as I mentioned, and that you get much less biomass. But this doubled up system here actually is a compromise that allows us to get a reasonable amount of biomass, including root biomass, from pigeon pea. And then we also have the soybean and groundnut biomass in addition to that. So we can start to see that these could actually theoretically and from modeling build soil carbon. Fortunately, we also have some evidence. As I said, there's a paper in Science years ago showing pigeon pea can access phosphorus, and so to improve fertilizer efficiency from above that 20% you generally get. But we wanted to see if it actually occurred under smallholder farm conditions. Because as I said, how are we going to improve fertilizer efficiency unless we actually test the ability of these legumes to improve nitrogen fixation, to improve phosphorus returns when you add fertilizer. And so we've been able to show, this is Gina Garland's work with Johan Six, that in fact, if you look at the bulk soil, you don't see differences. But even just after 1 year, you start to see increases in the aggregates, macro and micro aggregates, where we see that, at least I put it in red there because this light isn't working, that in fact your organic phosphorus is going up in both your macro under pigeon pea and in your micro aggregates. So there's some evidence here that you can actually see the increases in phosphorus that translating into something that then subsequent crops could use. So again, we always try and keep it real by looking at what are the overall grain produced, because farmers have to use this for the nutrition, use this for sales. So, and we try and look at things on at least a two-year basis, because in rotational systems, you can't look at just the rotational year. You have to look at the whole system. And again, this double-up legume system is performing well and also producing grain that is higher value in most markets because it's higher nutrient. So one of the themes we've heard throughout today is using spidergrams, right? It seems to be one of the few ways, these radar charts, is one of the only ways we can show these multiple aspects at once on different axes. And in fact, this afternoon, there's going to be a talk about stable intensification indicators that I'm going to be talking in a bit more detail about how do we measure stable intensification. Because indeed, as we heard earlier, we have to know where we're going and we have to see what are the metrics along the way. So we've included such things as some human and social things, such as women's preferences in smallholder farms, so trying to get at kind of women being able to integrate and think about it more from the perspective of those that do the more of the food processing and perhaps more of the labor for weeding in this particular system. So they really liked the double up legume system. But if you want to maximize maize yield on an annualized basis, then you should go with fertilized maize, obviously. And we do, by the way, use fertilizer in the double up legume rotation system. In the maize year, there is fertilizer. But of course, you can use less because you're using half rates because of the nitrogen fixation, and you're also only applying it in the maize year. So in the end, it's a quarter rate. So nitrogen efficiency goes massively up, at least from this metric. Income depends a lot. The gross margin depends on your assumptions about maize fertilizer and grain legume price ratios. That's one of the challenges with income as a metric, and that's why we use other metrics too, because it just depends a lot on the subsidies and on how the markets, your access to markets and so on. Soil organic matter changes, this is based on modeling that's been calibrated from our on-farm work, and it depends a lot. One thing to remember is in areas that are not degraded, it's hard to see changes, but in areas that are degraded, we can actually see a buildup over time. So finally, I just want to leave you with evidence that recent meta-analysis has been showing weed suppression goes up with diversity. And as I mentioned, zonal management, tillage is an important part of this, but I think this is a really nice study recently showing that, in fact, if we don't have the diversity, this is showing soil carbon gains over disturbed soil, over conventional tillage. I guess my time is up. So anyways, basically, the diversification that we're starting to try out, you're seeing mixtures becoming very popular throughout much of Michigan. Through cover crop mixtures, these are a legume and a mustard and a cereal. So I really want to challenge you to think about how you would diversify your own systems, because whether we use precision agriculture, reduced tillage, we still need to have this diversified base, and particularly these diversity plus systems, or we won't get the environmental services. We won't get the sustainability in there without paying attention to the biology. So I look forward to discussions and put that on the table. Do you agree with that? Do we need this biology? And if so, how do you think we could fit it in to our intensified systems? Thank you.